I'd like to start by acknowledging my authors and my co-authors, Dr. Seaman and Dr. Birch at the Savannah River Ecology Lab, as well as Jonathan Judy, and of course our funding agency, the EPA, which we want more funding from. So we cannot escape nano. It's everywhere. The revolution has started, and yesterday, S9 and S11 have had a really interesting symposium on the characterization and reactivity. And I heard many interesting things, but one of the most interesting things I heard is that in the next year or the next few years, nanoparticle production and manufacturing is going to be a $1 billion or $1 trillion industry. And that is a lot of advances and benefits, but it's also a lot of potential negative impacts that environmental agencies have start cutting up on, and they want data and they want information on some of those potential impacts. Really simplistically, the fate and transport of nanoparticles in the environment can be shown in that little diagram where you can move from one component to another or from one trophic level to another. And many groups have started looking at the movement or the fate of nanoparticles in a food web or in a food chain. But being a geochemist and a soil scientist, I look at that picture and I see that it is ultimately the interaction with clay minerals that's going to basically govern the fate and transport of the nanoparticle, as well as their ability to move up the food chain. So while our group focuses mainly on the trophic transfer from a detritivore to a microorganism to up higher trophic level, I wanted to look at some basic experiments with the soil. And so the objective of this study was to look at a manufactured zinc oxide sorption behavior on a clay mineral. And zinc nanooxide is a candidate for being released in the environment. Its production, its manufacturing, and it's almost found everywhere. It is very cheap, and it's found in pigment, in rubber, in additives. So it's kind of logical to assume that it might find its way to the environment. And we focused on manufactured nanoparticle because we wanted to look at some real potential impact on the environment. So we purchased ours from Applied Nanowork, and they come in a clear solution. This is it. And with a cell distribution of 2 to 6 nanometers. And the first step that we did is characterize it really extensively, chemically and physically. So I'm going to show you a little brief extract for that. These are my nanoparticles, or the nanoparticles. I call them my, but because I work with them so much. So you can see the fringes. You can see the moiré pattern. We used TM a lot for sizing initially, but we found that that might not be the best way to go. So we used dynamic light scattering, which put them around 1.2 nanometer hydrated diameter. I did some cryo TM that shows them these are my nanoparticle meter, that around 0.8 to 1 nanometer. But most interestingly was the chemical characterization. If you look at Dennis's table, you found 1 molar zinc in the solution, but also 3 molar acetate. That's three times more acetate than zinc in that solution that we have purchased. And it is very necessary because acetate is used to stabilize those nanoparticles in suspension. But also what we found out that acetate has a more important role to play, as I'm going to show you. Well, really quickly, what we have found that there are several acetate populations, and once you remove the first one, they stay in their primary size, almost slightly bigger. But once you remove the second acetate, they're going to clump together and they're going to grow, which indicates again the importance of the acetate. And I want you to keep that in mind, because when we do the soil sorption, that acetate is going to have an important role to play in explaining our results. So really simply, I wanted to start a really preliminary basic soil sorption and took a Wyoming Mount Merrill magnetite with a characterized TEC and a specific surface area. I measured those and they were kind of close to the to those values. I work with the parent material and the fine fraction that I obtain. And because of the fact that those nanoparticles are very sensitive to dilution and changing in pH, we did it kind of untraditional. So instead of varying the concentration of the zinc in the isotherm, we varied the concentration of the clay so that we can have the same sample that we work with, at the same characterized sample. And we used, I used the zinc acetate to reference the sorption behavior to see, to compare to my nanoparticle. And we did two desorption, water and the calcium chloride, typical soil sorption experiment for soil, and three replicates and the usual QA/QC. This is the clay. Again, this is not a typical soil isotherm. This is a clay instead of concentration, and this is a milli equivalent. And right off the bat, you're going to see that there is probably no difference between the zinc acetate sorption and the zinc nanoparticle sorption. They max out. These are 50 milligram per liter, 100 milligram per liter, and 200 milligram per liter zinc. And that was very interesting for us, because I did not truly expect the nanoparticle to have the same sorption isotherm as a aqueous zinc. So we kept thinking, how is that nanoparticle sorbing? They are surely small enough to be sorbed on a clay, but what about the acetate? So a control factor that we did is go back and measure acetate on all our sorption experiments. And it was, again, very interesting. This is the zinc acetate where we expect recovery of all the acetate. This is the expected concentration. We had a similar acetate recovery in our nanooxide solution, nanoparticle, whereby all the acetate that was supposed to be with that zinc that keeps it stable in a suspension was recovered in the sorption. So the question is, again, are those, I showed you earlier that once you remove that acetate, at least actively in a high resolution TGA, that the nanoparticles cease to exist as nanoparticles and they grow. So in that case, we're removing the acetate, but yet the question is, what's happening to the nanoparticle when it's on that surface of the clay? So that was one question that we kept in mind, and I thought maybe you remove the acetate, the zinc oxide is not actually sorbing, but it's maybe just sitting on the clay. And so we went to the desorption, and we shook with water, because if it was a physical sorption, it was going to come off, and it did not. Shaking with water, desorbing, did not get out any of the zinc, in the case of the zinc acetate and the nanoparticle. So at that stage, I pretty much convinced myself that those nanoparticles are really sorbing on the surface of the clay. As far as the desorbing, this is again with 0.5 molar calcium chloride. And one interesting thing to see is that at every treatment, at the 50 milligram per liter, the 100 milligram per liter, and the 200, I'm consistently desorbing more zinc from the zinc oxide nanoparticle treatment. I'm sorbing almost the same amount with the same speed. I'm recovering all the acetate, but I'm desorbing more zinc. Most of you are going to say, well, this is strength of interaction or charge. Maybe the nanoparticles are small enough, but they might not have the same charge as the zinc. I got you covered. But before I show you that, let me show you the X-ray diffraction. I took a soil sample after it's been desorbed and been washed, and we did X-ray. And we've seen some increased expansion in the interlayer of the clay with the nanoparticle. It's not as significant, given the fact that it is at low degrees, but it is consistent. With all the samples that have been treated with nanoparticle, we do see an increased interlayer expansion. And that interlayer expansion is consistent with what you expect from a divalent hydrated carrion. So we took the same clay sample and we shook it with the barium, the zinc, magnesium, regular soil chemistry, and the nanoparticles consistently ranked higher as far as the despacings, which at that point indicates that it is acting like a hydrated carrion, it's just slightly bigger. But I was still intrigued with the fact on why are they desorbed more from the clay, and I wanted to see maybe the charge is different. And as I said, I started the resin experiment, and I chose two resins, strongly and weakly acidic, being a sulfonic and a carboxylic group. And we did a regular sodium magnesium saturation of the resin and the sorption and desorption with a zinc acetate and the zinc oxide nanoparticle. The idea being that, one, I might see a different interaction or different interaction with the nanoparticle with the surface of the resin, but also I might be able to estimate the charge of the zinc oxide nanoparticle, explaining why, although they're sorbing the same, they're desorbing way faster. Unfortunately, there was no difference whatsoever as far as charge and interaction with the resin and the zinc oxide nanoparticle. So the ratio of magnesium to zinc and the sodium to zinc desorbed were similar between the zinc acetate and the nanoparticle. What to do now? Honestly, I'm very surprised by those results, but I'm interested again as far as how to explain the desorption and what implication that desorption, the ease of desorption, is going to have on transport experiments. So while we found that it is, has a similar behavior to a sulfated divalent cation, we also found evidence for interlayer expansion. So they're getting inside the clay. The question is, how are they going to stay? Are they going to stay inside the clay? Are they going to retain nanoparticle properties inside the clay? Because we know that we remove the acetate. The idea was to have TM images, but the TM has been down for more than 3 weeks now. But I did want to get TM images of the clay to see if they maybe we can see the nanoparticle inside of them, or we're going to see nothing, as I expect. And I wanted to see a TM image of the desorption supernatant to see that once you remove that acetate, you're sorbing them, but in what form are they desorbing? And then maybe take that desorption supernatant and do other microbial experiments like we've been doing on a bigger scale in the project. I want to start a transport in the column experiment, as I said, and I also would like to initiate experiments with larger size. I have purchased a larger size nanoparticle batch, which around 20 to 40 nanometer, and I want to see if the behavior is different. The idea being that maybe those particular nanoparticles are small enough, or they're so small that we cannot actually detect a difference between them and between a divalent cation. And with that experiment, thank you for your attention. And if you have questions, go ahead.
One quick question. That much acetate around that can, I'm wondering what the effect of microbial activity might be on the plants.
Actually, yesterday, my colleague, Dr. Bush, showed some of those results, and it was a challenge figuring out if the microbes are going to actually get to the nanoparticles. So we've initiated experiments. We're actually done with that stage. We've done experiments with an acetate utilizer and a non-acetate utilizer. And amazingly enough, we used the C. nicator bacteria that is able to utilize all that acetate around it and actually do get to the nanoparticle. But in a traditional non-acetate utilized environment, the question is very valid. And you do want to ask yourself, are we going to regulate the acetate, which actually happen to be toxic to some bacteria, or just the nanoparticle? And if so, what are they seeing? And so this is a very legitimate question that we are asking ourselves.
Thank you a lot.